thing. I could also sit. I could lean forward, Larry King style. I don't know. Can people in the back hear me if I stand? Yes? Okay, great. Okay. I don't want you to miss a word. That's why I asked. So like I said, I'm Rob Moore. I'm a Boston attorney. Before I begin, let me just disclose that I have nothing to disclose. I should also point out that the research that underlies this project was conducted when my colleague Jason Smith and I were employees of the Public Health Advocacy Institute in Boston, and we were funded by NPLAN, which is a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation initiative. Now, our project, when we were undertaking this, was to look at legal options for enforcing existing standards for physical activity and nutrition in schools and childcare. And so we looked at what legal options were available to various actors in these situations. What could parents do? What could childcare administrators do? That sort of thing. And as we looked at it, we reached the conclusion that the solution to the gap in enforcement of these standards is less likely to be a legal one and more likely to be political. So what informed our conclusion was just some thoughts on what makes a law enforceable. Well, there's really two characteristics. You need enforceable language. The language needs to be specific enough so that one can deduce compliance or noncompliance. Also, the language of the law should contain some sort of consequences, either sanctions for failure to comply or incentives to encourage compliance. The other thing that a law needs is a mechanism for enforcement. So the body that's charged with enforcing these laws needs to have the manpower and the resources to do so. So with that in mind, we reached our conclusion. State and federal standards for physical activity and nutrition in childcare settings and schools are largely unenforceable for one or more of the following reasons. First, the laws just lack specificity, so we can't really tell if someone's in compliance or not. They lack consequences. Ripped from the headlines, that slide was. These laws don't have sanctions, or they don't have incentives. There's the government bodies that are charged with overseeing compliance. They lack the resources to do so. And finally, private enforcement is just not a realistic option. So to illustrate, let's talk about the National School Lunch Program. Very important, as everyone here knows, I'm sure, this is the program that affects, if not dictates, what schools serve kids for lunch. Public schools serve kids for lunch. Schools are reimbursed under this program for certain foods, known as program foods, that they serve kids. But to participate in the National School Lunch Program, then schools have to play by the NSLP's rules. So under the NSLP, the USDA is the manager. It enters into agreements with designated state agencies, DSAs, that tend to be Department of Education's or their equivalent in state governance. Now, these DSAs have two jobs. First, they have to enter into agreements at the district level with school food authorities, SFAs, and they have to set up and administer the requirements of the NSLP with those SFAs. Sorry for all the jargon, but otherwise this presentation would be 20 minutes. Under the NSLP, food service has to be self-sufficient also. So the agreement between the DSA and the SFA has to reflect that. The SFA has to go and it can't make up for any shortfall in their school food budget with other parts of the school budget. The other thing that the DSA has to do is administer wellness policy requirements. They have to come up with some sort of criteria that the SFAs have to come up with some sort of nutrition or physical activity standards for the schools. So under the NSLP, there's really two types of foods. There's the program foods and non-program foods. Program foods, those would be those that are eligible for reimbursement. Reimbursement will be computed based on the number of meals that are served by the SFA and the number of students that are eligible for subsidized meals. Now, this food it meets standards that are based on the USDA dietary guidelines, and the SFA has to submit detailed school menus to the DSAs in order to determine that they're compliant. And there's non-program foods. Now, this includes, obviously these are not eligible for reimbursement, but these include competitive foods, which are foods that are sold in competition with the program foods. They're sold at lunchtime, and they're sold in food service areas in schools, as well as foods that are sold at other times and or in other areas of the school. Competitive foods are, there's at least a modicum of regulation at the federal level, but a lot of more regulation occurs at the state level. There's two categories of competitive foods. There's those that are of minimal nutritional value. These don't meet any USDA standards for nutrition in school foods and can't be sold in a food service area during the lunch period. And then there's a la carte. These can be sold subject to state regulation. And in fact, they often are sold during the lunch period. And that's because the income from the a la carte sales goes to make up for any potential shortfall that the SFA may have. So let's talk about enforcement of NSLP. On paper, NSLP sounds like a great idea for going and implementing real meaningful standards for physical activity and nutrition in schools, right? Its participation is widespread. It's shown an ability to get schools to serve certain types of foods. And yet, school diet is horrible. And why is that? Well, let's first talk about wellness policies. One could conceive of a world where wellness policies were drafted that would force districts to implement really good guidelines for diet and nutrition and physical activity in schools. And yet, that's not the case. The fact is that most DSAs require only that participating districts draft a wellness policy. There really isn't a lot of impetus for DSAs to check implementation of these. And that makes sense, because DSAs, if you think about it, lack the resources to do so. For example, say there is a say there was a wellness policy requirement that that teachers can't serve cake to kids at parties in class. Well, how could they how could the DSA possibly monitor that? They'd have to devote enormous amounts of manpower to go and doing spot inspections. And given all the competing priorities that DSAs have, considering their Department of Education's, they have to accredit teachers, they have to administer No Child Left Behind, there really isn't a lot of manpower left over for that. And in fact, these agencies are chronically underfunded and understaffed as it is. So what about nutrition standards? Again, in a perfect world, kids would be eating like this, and yet they're not. And there are several obstacles to using the NSLP to get kids to eat healthy. First, our current nutrition standards are lax, and improving them is going to be tough because the standards for what constitutes a program food or what's acceptable, what's a food of minimal nutritional value, those are all drafted by the USDA, and the USDA is a federal agency that has two masters. They have to tell us what to eat, and they have to serve the interests of the agricultural industry, and they're antagonistic. As a result, it's highly unlikely that we will get standards that actually reflect our interest in health solely. So even supposing we could twist the arm of the USDA and get some strict standards for program foods, we'd still have rampant unhealthy food served in schools. Because of the requirement that food service has to be self-sufficient, many districts just won't forego competitive foods because they think kids will eat less of these healthy foods and there will be a potential shortfall. Also, the NSLP doesn't regulate foods that are sold outside school food service areas during lunch times, and many districts view vending machines outside of cafeterias as a good way to raise revenue, which raises an interesting, somewhat related point that you have parts of the school that are competing with other parts of the school for kids' money. And what about private enforcement? Well, first of all, the National School Lunch Program doesn't provide for private causes of action, so any type of effort in this regard would have to be enforced, otherwise justified. Well, the most likely scenario that we could come up with for private enforcement would be litigation against school boards or SFAs that failed to serve nutritious foods, nutritious as defined by the USDA, foods to kids, under the theory that the school boards had a duty to serve this nutritious food and breached that by failing to comply with the NSLP nutrition requirements. Well, here's the first problem. You're sending these guys up against these guys. The guys on the right, that's your school board. It's typically lay people. I mean, it's going to be pretty awkward on bowling night if you're going and suing Bill there. And you know what? You're probably going to get some unfavorable press coverage, and you're probably going to get egged on Halloween, and all sorts of nasty things will ensue. So no one's going to do it. The other problem is, as with all litigation in which you allege that obesity or obesity-related illnesses are the harm, there's a real problem proving a causal nexus between the alleged breach of duty and the harm. Because, as everyone knows, there are many factors contributing to obesity. And so, our framework for enacting and enforcing standards for nutrition and physical activity in schools are fundamentally flawed. The standards themselves are often too vague for anyone to adjudge compliance, and enacting new and effective standards will be difficult. In any event, the mechanisms for enforcing those standards just don't work. So what to do? Well, first, let's write better laws. These laws, it sounds very simple, but it's deceptively complicated. First, these laws should have bona fide sanctions or incentives. And as we're drafting these sanctions or incentives, think about the means of enforcing and administering these sanctions and or incentives. Also, we need to take note of the fact that a mandate to do X can also mean don't do Y, especially when you're dealing with schools and childcare with limited class time, limited budgets, limited manpower to administer these things. And second, let's make enforcement a political priority, and that means organize and fund the bodies responsible for enforcement. So here is my contact information and my colleagues. And if you have any questions, please feel free to get in touch with me. Thank you. Go Celtics. 1-0.